This is Talk Star Wars,
the official podcast at talkstarwars.co.uk.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Talk Star Wars, the official podcast of talkstarwars.co.uk. This is episode 8. It's going to be our The Force Awakens reaction show, so we're just going to have a spoiler-laden conversation about the film. If you haven't seen it, tune out, come back to us when you've been. My name's Mark.
I'm Stephen.
And I'm Jeremy.
Right. The Force Awakens.
Fantastic.
What's your initial thoughts?
Fantastic. Possibly the best one ever.
Yeah.
That would be me.
Steve, initial thoughts?
Definitely better than the prequels. Very well made. There were certain things about it that I despised, which brought down the whole experience for me. And certainly not better than the originals.
Despised is a strong word. We'll take this apart then in a little bit more detail. For the record, I loved it. Before I hand it over to Jeremy to kick this all off, just a quick bit of housekeeping. This will definitely be the last show of the year because we're recording this on the 20th of December. So we're just days away now from Christmas. So we're going to have a couple of weeks off and we'll resume recordings in January. So I'm going to set listeners homework. If you've seen The Force Awakens, you're about to hear what we think. We want to hear what you think. So in the break between now and New Year, if you've got some thoughts you want to share, if you've got some insights, if you've got theories about where the next set of films are going, if you've got complaints, we want to hear about it. So please send us your thoughts. And we will do a listener-based episode when we come back in the new year. As if we've got enough to work with.
That's not fair, because they're all going to complain about me, because everyone loves it.
No, we don't want them to talk about us. We want to talk about the film. So tell us, give us your anecdotes. Give us your experience. What was your viewing like? Did you go in cosplay? We want to hear it all. You can send your stories to us at talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com. That's talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com. And we'll do a show centred around what you guys thought. Right. Back to us. Let's get to the bitching and the moaning. Jeremy, what did you make of The Force Awakens, mate?
I absolutely loved it. I was there 5 past midnight with all the other nerds and geeks and freaks of the world who didn't want any sleep that night. The cinema that I went to, there were loads of people in cosplay outside, Jawas and all sorts of wonderful things. It was an amazing atmosphere. And it was fantastic. I enjoyed that cinematic experience more than Avatar. So there. Because it was just, the whole atmosphere was incredible. And it was amazing to sit in a cinema with hundreds of people who are as much in love with the series as I am. And probably by the end of it, were even more so, apart from maybe one person crying in the background somewhere.
Was that
it was fantastic. Probably, yes.
I'm still there, yeah.
I saw your photograph from the... Sorry, Jeremy, I'll cut you off there.
That's right.
I was going to say, I saw your photograph from inside the screen that night.
Yeah. I was a little bit excited about that. I did think, when Star Wars comes up, I'll video it, but I thought, no, I'll probably get kicked out.
yeah, you would have done.
I'm not going to be doing that. So, yeah, I enjoyed it from... Almost obviously the credits give you chills down your spine. The new characters were fantastic. Finn, I thought, was brilliant. The evolution of his character from the beginning to the end was fantastic. Rey was brilliant. All of them. It was just brilliant. I think Kylo Ren is a fantastic bad guy.
Yeah. I want us to try and touch on a few of these characters in a minute. So we'll try and hold back on how much we go into on those, and then we'll talk about each of them separately, if you like. You saw it at 1:01, didn't you?
Yeah.
So you saw it before Steve or myself.
Yep.
What was the reaction like in that auditorium when the Lucasfilm or the Star Wars logo came up? Were there applause?
There was applause. There was intakes of breath. You could just feel the excitement welling, you know, from your stomach. There were people cheering at the end of it when the credits started rolling as well, and cheering and big round of applause and stuff like that.
Now that's unusual for British audiences, isn't it?
It was not like an experience I've had in the cinema, because the song beforehand, there was cheers and whoops when it went up, and you know, it was, and say cheers at the end and big round of applause, which is very unusual.
Yeah.
Well, that's what it used to be like when we were young.
I don't remember it. I always remember a cinema going experience used to be very reserved.
I was going to church when we were kids. I thought you were just quiet and
you know,
someone opened a bag of Maltesers, you'd want to murder them.
I remember in Return of the Jedi when I saw it with you, Jeremy. We always woo-wooed. Maybe it's just us.
Yeah, just I think so. When I remember going to the cinema around that sort of time with my parents and whatever, and never hearing that, there would always be the sarky comments. There would always be somebody cheering. It was about time when the BBFC credit came up. I told you what the cert was. There'd always be that sort of silly thing. But never, I've been to the cinema in other countries. And in America, people really do invest, don't they? And it's a very active audience. Everyone's cheering and screaming things at the screen. It's more like a concert.
I must admit, that would get on my tits.
Well, we're British.
I like the fact, the thing is, that you know me, Mark. We've sat in a cinema where some woman's called a woman a mentor.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, she had a meltdown, was
screamed it at the top of her voice.
Yeah.
And that thing, that really annoys me. Like, do that. You know, you're not at home.
Yeah.
You know, I suppose it is a bit of a British thing, but if I'm paying, you know, 24 quid, which is what it costs to go to the movies, you know, in a nice seat, I don't want to be anyone annoying me, no.
Well, what was your experience like then, Steve?
Okay. Mine was totally different to Jeremy's. I didn't get any cosplay. There was no whooping or anything. But I did, obviously, being a Star Wars fan, I was personally invested at the start and thought, oh, my God, it's Lucasfilm. And it come the words and all the rest of it. And I always start a film not giving it a good rating. But as the film went on, the rating in my head and my feeling that I wasn't watching the film and I was in Star Wars again was increasing as I watched it.
Yeah.
However, for a couple of reasons, that dropped right off. And that, you know what those reasons are. We're on a spoiler alert anyway. The first gripe I have, which is a major gripe, is that they did it very safe and it basically is a rehash of A New Hope. It's almost, you can almost see the story is identical.
It's probably more of that combined with Return of the Jedi.
Oh, Return of the Jedi. See, I've heard that and Empire.
They had to destroy the shield and...
Yes. Know. Yeah, you're probably right. And the plans being hidden in... You know, Rey's character was awesome. But it was Luke Skywalker, wasn't it? You know, stuck on the planet, wants to get away, wants to be living in an exciting world. The family...
Actually, she didn't want to leave the planet.
No. Yeah,
no, that's a weird thing. Yeah, but
there are subtle differences.
I
found her a more engaging character than Luke. I thought, having watched them all again in the last week, anyway, I found Luke a little bit whiny compared to Rey. She was.
Yeah, her character and Finn's and Poe Dameron, they were exceptional. I wasn't overly.
I found Poe was lost in the mix compared to the others.
Yeah,
I think there wasn't a main character, was it?
There's a selection of characters that are certainly emerging, and I think he's going to fill somebody's boots in the next film because that's left a big hole, isn't it? So
he made me laugh when he was first going to get interrogated by Kylo Ren,
and he's like, "Oh, so brilliant.
We're just going to stare at each other." So I'm going to turn it.
Do you talk or do I talk? How does this work? That is just so charming. So funny, and it sort of cut through the tension in that scene.
Yeah.
But Steve.
Yes.
Carry on, mate.
That's all right. The second big gripe, which this is going to be the bone of contention for this whole podcast. For me, what annoyed me more than anything else, it wasn't in the film, the fact that Han died. It was the fact that it was blatantly obvious that Harrison Ford has gone, I'll do Star Wars, but you're going to kill me. Because otherwise, there's no way on God's earth they would write him out. He's a cash cow. And it kind of, they've pandered to his own wishes because he always wanted to be killed off. We all know that. And not only did they kill him off, which I got to the point, because I thought it was going to happen anyway. I got to the point where I was accepting that, but it was so underdone. No one cared afterwards. It was a poorly executed death. Chewie was over it the next day, and Leia, I didn't even get any emotional vibe from at all. And this is Han Solo. This is Star Wars. This isn't an incidental character that you can throw away like Obi-Wan, who's only been in it for one film and could come back as a Force ghost. This is Han Solo. This is everyone's hero. Mm. And that was so poorly executed in my mind. I went from an 8/9 out of 10 to a 5/6, like in that. And I was so angry.
I think that's such a shame that that didn't land with you, because it really landed for me.
It did with me.
I think
I thought it was very powerful. In fact,
I thought it was extremely powerful. And do you know what my take on it is? They sacrificed Han Solo in order to develop Kylo Ren.
Absolutely.
Well, yes, I think they used the fact that they needed to kill him off to enhance Kylo Ren. But
I don't know if that's the way it's come from. I mean, this is all very much legend now, isn't it? That Harrison Ford wanted to die at the end of Return of the Jedi. He wanted Han Solo to be done and dusted because, and this is a direct quote, Han Solo's got no mama, no papa, he has no story responsibilities at this point. And that's what Harrison Ford said about getting rid of Han Solo at the end of... He wanted him to sacrifice himself and add a little weight to it. I think they've taken that legacy. That's as much a part of Star Wars now as anything that happens in the narrative.
Yeah.
But the trouble is, if they planned to get rid of him, they wouldn't get rid of Han. They'd get rid of Leia and Chewie. Chewie was good, but Chewie's Chewie. I mean, you can't understand him. He's a walking carpet. But Leia...
My theory with the whole Chewie not being bothered about Han the next day is like a cat, like I said. I mean, Wookiees are just big splash cats, and they just move straight on. They're like, oh,
so
well,
you think Ray gave him a bowl of kibble, and then his allegiance transferred?
But from a Star Wars perspective,
change the tray every now and again, and he's all right. You know,
that is a big tray.
I do like your cat analogy, and as much as it is a great idea in a fictional world, when we're talking about factual Star Wars, Chewie would have laid his life down for Han. He would not be over him in 100 years, let alone overnight.
You've also got to think, these are battle-hardened people. They've known people die for years.
Yeah, but they're brothers. These two are brothers.
It's not a thing in Star Wars to mourn people. Owen and Beru died outside their homestead, and within minutes Luke was off rocking and rolling on the Millennium Falcon and didn't ever
that
look
always
back.
Made me hungry, that corpse. It may reminded me, I used to eat meat then, it reminded me of spare ribs.
It looks delicious, doesn't it? It looks smoky. and then you've got, at the end of Empire Strikes Back, I know it's not the character dying, but when Han was in Carbonite and he was ferried off with Boba Fett, for all intents and purposes...
He was dead, yeah.
For those characters, they'd lost him.
Yeah, but that was handled well.
That was handled the same way, Steve.
No, they were upset in the Falcon, and then Lando and Chewie... They took off and they was like, good luck, they knew where he was at that point.
Now, the analogue for that in this film is they bring Finn back and Finn's patched up the same way as Luke was patched up on the medical frigate at the end of Empire. And then Rey sets off with Chewie on the Falcon the same way Lando did. Now, yeah, they're not going to find Han Solo, that's done and dusted, but they go off to find Luke. The beats are all there.
I can tell you how I think that kind of proves that it was all PR and spin, those three being in it. Leia was useless. Han died, although he was in it a lot. So you got invested in him, and then they killed him off, which really pissed me off. And Luke was in it for 5 seconds. Now, before it came out, Luke was being interviewed about being in the film, and he wasn't in the film.
Right, but the story arc of the film is finding Luke.
Yeah.
So if Luke was in it 5 minutes into the film, it'd be a really short film. It'd be like, we're trying to find... Oh, there he is, the end.
Luke is there, even in his absence. He's in the DNA of the movie, isn't he?
Yeah, I agree with you, but that's not true, though. In the real life, in the film, absolutely, we're looking for him. But all the run-up to the movie, he was getting interviewed left, right and centre about what it was like to be back in Star Wars and how he enjoyed the work. He wasn't in it. How could he... And it was all bullshit. And that's how I know... that they've got Han in it. Leia's character was completely useless. She She had like two lines and she did two scenes.
That's one thing I predicted right.
What's that?
If I'm honest, that they weren't together anymore.
No, but yeah. They should kill her off. I mean, if she'd have died, I'd have thought, meh. But they brought Han into it. You got really invested. I was loving Han.
Yeah, but that's good though, Steve. It's done its job.
I agree.
I think you're reeling from this, and that's a testament to how well made this film is.
Because you'll be over
the movie at that point. I was like, this is all to do with Harrison Ford.
But wait until the next film, because
I'll be upset if they don't kill Leia.
And when this, you have to remember, right? We can't watch any of the original movies with any objectivity. We see them all now as one big thing. It's impossible to watch Empire without thinking about what's gone before it and what comes after it, mm-hmm. because they're all one big thing now. We're looking at The Force Awakens and suddenly we're all adrift because we are invested and we don't know where it's going. There isn't any safe purchase. You can't say that Leia is or isn't affected by Han's death because we haven't seen the fallout from that yet. That'll be in the next film.
Yeah. Okay, no worries.
Donald Gleeson, I thought, was abysmal.
He was playing to the back row a little bit, I think, wasn't he? It was quite a large performance.
I think he was put there. I thought his character was great.
Yeah, and it was that whole... And the other big bone of contention for me, I know I'm picking holes in it, but I did like a lot of stuff as well. Why the hell? Nothing wrong. Give people American accents if they're American actors, but don't deliberately change their accent. Why did they give an American accent?
I think they needed to do
that.
He's
the hero.
Yeah, because he's the hero. And they needed to warm him up as well. Because I think if you had two Brits at the head of this thing... it could have come off a little bit too cold. I mean, Donald Gleeson was doing a very British, very broad British.
He did a very good English accent, didn't he?
Yeah, and they are... It's always those...
Traditionally, the English have been the bad guys.
They have. They're always the evil politicians, aren't they? The Palpatine and the Grand Moff Tarkin, they're always that. So you recognise that as being the bad guys.
And obviously, Ray... had an English accent, but Carrie Fisher was trying for one, wasn't she?
Yeah, Ray's almost, it's a non-regional dialect, isn't it? It's called RP, it's received pronunciation, when it's just, it's had all the
just English
regional things stripped off of it. So it's, very, I thought she's had a wonderful everything. I absolutely fell in love with Ray.
To them, Mark, on the way, like, did you not think there was something missing? I just...
From Ray?
No, sorry, not Ray. Ray was awesome. Sorry, Leia I was talking about.
Leia, yeah. I think she was kind of like a Mon Mothma sort of role, wasn't she? So
yeah.
Very much in the background, very much the legacy.
That's what they needed. I mean, that's what will bring in the fanboys. You can't really stick her in a gold bikini anymore because you'll stop people watching it.
Yeah.
She's, you know...
You can't have her running around gun-toting. Because
I guess I'm
finding it would be ridiculous.
I'm finding it hard to adjust that they weren't at all the main people in it at all.
No. I didn't expect them to be.
We knew they weren't.
I'd hoped that it was going to reinvigorate Star Wars not only for the next generation but also the 45-year-olds.
Yeah, I think it has, mate. I think it has, and in time, I'm certain that you will. Warm up
to it. I need to watch it again. I certainly need to watch it again.
Yeah, I need to watch it again because I don't feel comfortable enough reviewing it. This is why we're just doing a reaction show today because I'm not familiar enough with it to start breaking it down. I'm too close to it. I'm too head over heels in love with this film to be able to objectively break it down. I mean, I watched it in a slightly different situation to you two guys because there was only three people in my screening. It was an industry screening, so I kind of missed out on what you guys got. I haven't seen it with an audience yet, so there were no cheers, there were no cosplayers. It was just myself and two colleagues watching this thing all the way through, and for I think it's about 2-hour 15-minute runtime, isn't it? I kept being pulled out of the movie by the stupid grin I had plastered on my face. I was starting to feel uncomfortable because I was just grinning from ear to ear. I enjoyed every bloody minute of it.
I'm struggling to find a bit in it that I didn't warm to or didn't like.
Yeah, I am very, and Mark will attest to this, and it's, it goes against me. It's not a good thing. I am very unforgiving about films, and I've like kind of lost. I've got the. We've said this several times in the podcast. For me, the enjoyment is the run up, not the film itself. I know that sounds really weird.
But no, I understand that completely.
I get off so much more about all the dissecting it and mythology and all like the run up to it and the excitement. It's like a computer game when they come out. They're never as good as the one in your head.
That's the problem, isn't it? And I've been saying all year that I didn't think this film could live up to the hype. And
I think it did, though.
And I kind of think I was wrong, and I agree with you. In a way, that statement that it couldn't live up to the hype would suggest that I would come out thinking, yeah, that's kind of good. But I came out of that thinking, oh my God, this is incredible. And I don't want to tell people it's incredible because I don't want to build it up too much and dash there.
I did think I'd be disappointed, and I wasn't in any way.
No, I wasn't.
I think I'll enjoy it eventually more than...
We need to see it together, Steve.
Guardians.
I think we should all see it together.
Yeah. I enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy more, I have to say, when I saw that in the movie, because I wasn't expecting anything.
No. And that's the thing, isn't it? This happens all the time. If you're going with high expectations, you're going to come away disappointed. I went into this with high expectations, and I came away anything but disappointed, and that's such a rarity for me. And now I feel like...
I think it was so well written as well, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It wasn't a question of you can write this but not say it. Everything was written so well.
Yeah. It was written well, but it was written so safely. It was...
They killed off Han Solo. How can that be safe?
Yeah,
because that's the same formula as A New Hope, and they killed off Obi-Wan.
Yeah, now
I've heard
this a lot. Let's just address this point. Before we move on and start looking at some of these characters, let's just address this point. A lot of people have said, our friend Paul has said this to me as well from MovieXFilmNews.com, that the film retreads A New Hope.
Yeah.
That's undeniable. So let's go around the table and just get our perspective on this, because it does retread New Hope. Jeremy, what are your thoughts on the similarities between The Force Awakens and A New Hope?
I don't have a problem with it at all. A New Hope was a fantastic film, and these are going to be the characters that my children will know of in Star Wars. They love the originals, but they're going to have these characters as their main thing. I think that A New Hope would redone basically for Return of the Jedi anyway. So
yeah,
it's not like it's a not reoccurring theme.
No, I'm
and,
with you on that, yeah.
You know, with the best one in the world, the Death Stars were pretty awesome, and they did blow up planets. So why not try and recreate something that can do it from the other side of the galaxy and blow up a few planets at once?
Yeah.
You know, they're on a winning formula there.
You and I are on exactly the same page on both of those points, Jeremy.
I would have liked to have seen them go, actually, you know what? We're not going to be pander to Disney's wishes. We're going to do something that's different, that takes the story further, and go with Heir to the Empire and go off on a tangent. That's a remnant of an empire there. This remnant is like, hang on, where's the rebels? Like, they're supposed to be huge, and yet they've got one piddly ass base in the middle of nowhere. They have a few ships. The Empire is supposed to be distinguished, and they've built a freaking planet inside out that gobbles up stars. Where did that come from? I was like, no, it's a bit too convenient. And like, actually, let's play it safe, because we know A New Hope worked. Let's bring in the dollars. We need 4 billion of them. And that kind of, that's what hits to me.
Okay, I get your rationale there. I think that's kind of an oddly negative way to look at it. But that's because you're still
reeling
from it. So I understand where you're coming from.
Aren't films supposed to make an impact on you? If there's no point watching a film if afterwards you don't do this.
We wouldn't be podcasting about a film. If you walked out of it nonplussed, we wouldn't be podcasting about it.
Absolutely, and I totally agree with you there, Jeremy.
It's done its job, Steve.
I'm not sitting here thinking, that really annoyed me, I wish he'd lived, because he's related to Leia and they were in love. I'm thinking Harrison Ford and Disney, two things that I shouldn't be thinking about when I'm watching Star Wars.
No, and that's why, that never crossed my mind. When I was watching it, for the 2 hours and 15 minutes, I was completely absorbed by it, and I never thought about what goes on in the production of it.
No, well, I didn't until... There are two points where I was removed from the cinema. The first one, I wasn't really even that worried about the New Hope similarities. I was just going, oh, okay, it kind of works, I guess. The bad CGI with Snoke was, I thought, what the hell? They've just, like, had the biggest budget in the world.
Yeah.
And his hands were, like, use real hands, for God's sake. Why are you doing CGI hands that move, like, every now and then in a weird way? It was just not, like, you know, your Planet of the Apes, where you've got 100 apes sit rendered, like, perfectly, and you cannot tell it's CGI.
If you had those apes 25 foot tall, or however big he was, you would see flaws. If you look at anyone that big, you see more flaws.
Well, they're still only the same size on the screen.
Mm-hmm. I think when we talk about Kylo, let's roll Snoke into that conversation, because I think there's definitely some stuff to discuss there. I just want, on this, before we move on from the New Hope similarities, I just wanted to throw something out there, because I've been listening to a lot of podcasts. I've heard a lot of people say the same thing. It's a rehash, it's a redo, it's a remix, or it's a homage. I think
it's Paul like it, by the way, Mark. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, not particularly. He put something on MGFN that was slightly negative, I think. And in a private messaging group, he's kind of getting mauled for it a little bit. But yeah, head over there and head over to moviegeeksfilmnews.com to see what Paul had to say about it. I think he comes from a similar perspective to you, Steve. Mm-hmm. But I said this to Paul actually about the riff on A New Hope, and it's not just A New Hope really, it's also Phantom Menace that did the same thing. And if you look at if you take the three characters, Anakin, Luke and Rey, the central characters to the first act in a trilogy, they all start the same way. They all start out as disenfranchised, semi-orphaned on a backwater planet, dusty backwater planet, and then they get thrust onto the hero's journey. Yeah. That's the stage. That's the Star Wars stage. And what they've done with each of them is they've given us very different characters in that setting, and that's never been more apparent than with Rey. She's a very different character to both Anakin and Luke. She's more proactive. She's more courageous. She's more noble.
She's already tough.
She's already hardened, yeah. And
she's very strong with the Force, which I loved.
Yeah.
And like, no training required.
All of that takes place on the stage, the Act One of Star Wars stage. So the similarities are there. And it wasn't a get-rich-quick scheme from Disney thinking, well, the New Hope did well, let's do it, because that is a dangerous folly. They're telling the story on a Star Wars stage. They are going to have similarities. But that's as far as the similarities went, I think. So when you start looking at characters like Rey, Finn, Kylo Ren, Poe Dameron, you get very different characters. Characters we haven't seen in Star Wars before.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, should we kick off and talk about some of these characters?
Yep, I'm up for that.
A little bit more focused. Who do we want to start with? Steve, you kick Ray. Off. Pick. You want to start with Ray?
Well, only because I want to do some positivity.
Yeah, please, yeah.
I loved Ray's character. Like, and the whole way it was handled, the scavenger thing. Honestly, if I could rewrite that film, I would take Han, Luke and Leia completely out and have it going off on a tangent. Mention them, you know, so that you've got your universe intact and the Star Wars mythology. I would have done a film just about Rey. Even Finn, I like his character and he was great, but Rey was the centre of the film and was brilliantly done.
Yeah, and Daisy Ridley was a wonderful actress.
Even though she hates herself as an actress.
I don't understand why. I mean, maybe that's a good thing because it's keeping her motivated. But I thought, considering this is her first feature, Daisy Ridley acquitted herself extremely admirably.
She looked a bit like Keira Knightley.
Uncanny, isn't it?
A more rounded. Keira Knightley had some dinner.
What does that suggest? What does that suggest to you? Because who was Keira Knightley in Star Wars?
Oh, yeah.
She was Padme, wasn't she?
Padme's body double.
Yeah.
And it's undeniable that there is a similarity between... I mean, she's very much like Keira Knightley, but there's definitely a little bit of Natalie Portman in her look.
Yeah.
And that must have been intentional.
Yeah.
Because as much as I've been saying all year, or since the casting was announced... I really wanted Rey. It's a lot coming from the same place as you, I think, Steve.
Mm.
I wanted Rey, Finn and Poe Dameron to be separate characters who had no connection to anybody else.
She's obviously got a connection to someone, hasn't she?
I think she's Luke's daughter now, more than
it's
ever.
So right. It makes sense, doesn't it? Paul's just messaging me, by the way.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, he's just sending me messages. And we just said we're actually talking about you on the podcast. So you might listen to this at some point.
Yeah, hello, Paul.
Yeah, there was...
Hello, Paul.
She was the saving... Hello, Paul. She was the saving grace for me. Even Finn didn't say that. Her character was brilliant. And I loved it.
There's one little scene. It's more of a shot, really, in a scene.
Can I just say something, Mark?
Yeah, sorry, please do. Go on, mate. Yeah.
Paul's asked if he can come in.
Yeah, I'll call him in. Hang on.
Yeah, call him in. He wants to jump in on it. Yeah, so...
Even out the odds between the good side and the bad side, if he doesn't like it.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly, because I am feeling a bit like...
He's bringing balance to the force.
I am almost absorbed with negativity now. All I need to do is kill my father and I'll be there.
It doesn't look like he's on... Let's see if this pulls me in. Yeah, there was one little shot of Rey in a scene where the quad hopper explodes,
mm-hmm.
and her and Finn are knocked to the ground, and they're still on Jakku and they're running from the Imperials, from the First Order. And she leans down and offers him a hand to pick him up. And the first thing he does is say, "Are you okay?" And she looks at him and says,
"Yeah, I like it."
Like, as if to say,
"I'm a gentleman.
I'm saving you, you dumbass."
Yeah, I like that bit.
Which she was doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good bit. See, I liked all the bits with her in it, and I liked all the bits with Finn in it. I just didn't like any of the bits with Leia. Luke at the end was pointless, and Han, when I knew it was building up to his death, it was just annoying me that they were bothering to let you invest in his character when they were making you laugh. He was doing one-liners. I thought, fuck, this is Han, and I'm going to lose him in a minute. Why are they doing this? And that
because it's an important part of the story.
It's an important part of his contract that he didn't want to be in anymore.
No, I think you're just being a miserable...
I'm willing to double or nothing on our spooning bet, which I won, by the way. It wasn't
you haven't won that. You have
won. I'm double or quits that it will come out in the near future that Han wanted to be written out.
Yeah, but we knew that. We even spoke about this a few weeks ago, going, "Do you think Han will die in this movie?" And we were all like, "Oh, I don't know, maybe the next one." So we knew it. It's not like it's a great surprise.
Grow a pair and say, you know what?
Would you rather he had an off-screen death then?
I would rather say, well, honestly, I would rather them say, talk about him, reference him and say, "Oh, he's off smuggling in the outer quadrant." Done. And then not, and then you can live your own little fantasy that Han's alive somewhere doing his thing. And you have
I think your Han fantasies go further than you let us believe.
You need to start writing fan fiction.
This is about losing yourself in something that makes you feel like a child. And people snuffing it. And
you're not doing that.
There are key characters you don't kill off in fiction. In science fiction and in fantasy and in fairy tale.
No,
you
don't
kill off your lead protagonists.
Right.
You don't see it in the, you know, in Cinderella. You don't see it in Star Wars either. Even the original.
Dude.
I don't know.
Let's, Jeremy, let's get your thoughts on Rey, and we'll move on from Finn, and then Steve can turn the Finn conversation into another Han conversation.
Yeah. I thought Rey was brilliant. She was funny. The whole movie was funny. Character development was brilliant, and I love the fact she had no idea she was powerful with the Force.
Yes.
And to be fair, I didn't give her much thought, because the pictures I'd seen were Finn with a lightsaber, so I'm instantly thinking, oh, it's Finn that got the Force, and I was completely not even thinking about her.
Yeah, that was a bit of a bait and switch, wasn't it? The whole Finn.
But I like the fact that we've got so much wrong.
Yeah, I do. I'm really pleased with that, because it would be terrible to call every shot.
You know, if they were Force clones, the Knights of Ren, it'd be rubbish, because
Steve would have nailed that.
You
right
never
now.
Know. You don't know yet. Maybe it'll come out in episode 2.
We'll see.
I mean,
anyway, so Rey was brilliant, and Han's dead.
Let me just ask a quick question. Let's just say Paul's joined us. Paul.
Good morning.
Welcome to Talk Star Wars.
Are you sure you want this negative? You sure you want this negative wave coming your way?
We've got Snoke and Kylo in now.
We've had an overview of the films. We're just talking about some characters, Paul. So we'll come around to you for your take on some of the character development in this film. All right.
Yep.
Jeremy, I just wanted to ask quickly before we move on from Rey. Did you have any concerns with how rapidly she discovered the Force? How quickly she became proficient in the Force?
No, because I think she was probably using it in a day-to-day life anyway, not realizing. You know, she dispatched the two guys trying to nick BB-8 without any problem at all. And the best one in the world, she's a girl with no training of any way, and all of a sudden she can beat up two fully grown men, alien things. And you know, I think her dexterity in the crashed spaceships and things shows. Yeah. But you know, the way she can climb isn't a normal person. She's using the Force the whole time. It's just maybe something she hadn't put a name to it. Once she realised she could use the Force, and she used the Force on the Stormtrooper, if they still called them, to let her out of the chair. You're like, she finally realised what it is.
Yeah.
You know, when she was flying the Millennium Falcon, she clearly used the Force, but had no idea she was doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no way she would have been doing all of that stuff without something behind it. And it was, and that's true. We've talked about the echoes of Episode One and A New Hope, and both of those characters. Anakin used the Force for his pod racing. Luke used it to bullseye Womp Rats in his T-16 and Beggar's Canyon. So you got that element of these characters that have learned to use this ability, but they just haven't been able to put a label on what it is.
Yeah.
Steve, did you have any problems with how quickly she became proficient?
No, I put Finn's character development and everything about her path in the story.
You mean Rey?
Rey was almost perfect. Like, and that's why it was so hard.
Would it have been more perfect if she'd saved Han?
Probably.
My
problem isn't with Han's death, and yet we need to get this straight. It was the way it was done, the lackluster, that no one cared afterwards, and in fact it was personal to Harrison Ford and not necessarily integral to the story, and that's what annoyed me.
In every way integral to the story.
I would have just killed someone else then. Kill Finn off. He's new. Kill Leia even. I mean,
have you pulled this back to Han Solo?
I can't help it.
Someone used the Force on him. Paul, can we get your take on Finn?
I agree with Steve, unfortunately. I thought Han's death was nothing but a Harrison Ford sweetener. I'm sorry. It had almost zero purpose in that whatsoever. It was just a replication of the Darth versus Luke bridge on Bespin, and it didn't serve any major purpose. Chewie didn't shoot for about 4 minutes anywhere near blinking Kylo Ren. There didn't seem to be any point in, you know, there didn't seem to be any real care of what was going on with the situation. And when they got back to the base, is Leia with a smile on her face, gives her a hug, and Chewie walks off. He's like, hang on, your best friend for 4,000 years has just died, and you're just going to sort of tap,
I think
high five the people on the... I didn't get it at all.
He got a whiff of Wookiee nip, is what it is, and
he
was off the play.
Wookiee nip, yeah. We've been talking about this, Paul, about how we think there's a lot of similarities to Empire with Han's fate being left in the balance in the end of Empire, and then how that gets picked up and addressed in the next film, and this. Seems to me to have very similar tones, where obviously we've lost that character in the end of this film, and then everything's almost like a silent montage.
Finn's going to carry that mantle, basically.
I think it might be Poe. I think Poe might take that character's.
Hasn't one of them gone back to work already, and one of them hasn't, as in Finn and Rey?
Yeah.
Which one is it that's gone back to work already?
John Boyega is on set in January. And Daisy Ridley won't be joining him straight away.
Which is weird, because she's at the end of the film with Luke. And don't get me started on Luke, Paul. I'm going to leave that to Paul.
Oliver Reed.
We'll get to Luke right at the end, because obviously that's where he belongs, apparently.
Rewind it a bit, Mark. In relation to your question about Rey, she really is our only hope, frankly.
I quickly interject here because I have to go.
Okay.
I am going to a charity truck pull.
Oh, you're going to pull some trucks.
I'm not going to pull the truck, but a friend of mine is. It's for the Bex Factor charity cancer research thing.
So, oh, the Bex.
That's great.
Good luck.
Can donate or something?
If you just look up the Bex Factor.
Bex Factor.
Bex Factor.
Okay, nice one.
We're off to lend some support to that.
Do you want to give us your final thoughts on the movie then, Jeremy, before we go?
Final thoughts on the movie are fantastic. Claire loved it as well. And I'm sure that Alana and Freddie, who are with me now.
Baby.
Hello.
Baby.
They're going to love it as well. We're going to go watch it on Christmas Eve, aren't we?
Yeah, BB-8 chicken.
Okay, that's your running joke about BB-8. Okay.
Thanks, Jeremy.
No problem at all. I'm sure I've got to shoot. Yeah, I will speak to you all soon. Cheers, have mate. A nice Christmas.
Take care.
Thank you, mate.
Bye.
See you later. Bye.
See you later, mate. Mark, I might have to dip out shortly as well. My mum and dad have just arrived, but okay. I don't need to be here anymore because I've got my perfect... Paul, who we've never agreed perfectly on a film before.
Probably not.
Well, let's try. I understand that I've got a feeling we do on this one.
Let's try and get this wrapped up quickly then, Steve, so that we can get your... we'll get through a few... You just shelf the Han Solo talk for a little while and we'll be able to get through the rest of the characters. Paul, you're making a point about Rey.
Yeah, Rey for me is... She's the shining light at the moment going forward. I actually liked her more as a humanistic character than the possibility of her becoming the Jedi. In relation to the way she dealt with people on Jakku and stuff, that was purely her scavenger instincts, though. She'd been slaving away and scavenging away forever for little lumps of, you know, growing bread that she got like once every 3 or 4 days. So I don't know if there was any innate power that was making her do that. She had natural scavenger instincts. She'd been out there for years on her own. And the only thing she had was herself. So, of course, she's going to be able to fight and lay off the two colored guys. I don't think that was anything to do with the Force. Okay. I just think she kicks ass.
Yeah. I agree with the kicking ass bit. I definitely think there's a bit of Force work at play.
But you've got Kylo Ren, who is technically the figurehead of the new Empire at the moment. And he's able to basically scrape people's brains out just by pointing his hand at them. How did he have so much trouble fighting her after she has a few echoes in her mind during a lightsaber battle? I know he was injured, but he's a Sith. She wasn't. She had too. Yeah, her enlightenment was too quick. It makes you wonder how powerful they're going to make her. She's going to become a god of the light side.
He does say she's extraordinarily powerful in the Force, and she's just untrained. Right. I suspect
He's untrained because I didn't get any that much power from him at all.
From Kylo.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Within Star Wars storytelling, there's a new dynamic that's sort of come to the fore in some of the animated shows, and it's it seems to be a variation on the Sith, and they're called Inquisitors, these characters, where they're force sensitive lightsaber wielders, but they're not Sith Lords, so they're not trained, they're not an apprentice to a master. I get the impression that the Knights of Ren are pretty much a similar faction. So if we're right and Snoke turns out to be a Sith Lord, then he might have the Knights of Ren at arm's length, because he doesn't want anyone challenging him or removing him from his position. So he keeps the Knights of Ren down until one floats to the top, and then I think when they're ready to boot up the Sith again, then you'll have your apprentice. And
you know what I think the worst mistake they made with Kylo Ren is
him killing Han.
No, not yet. They let him take his helmet off.
Now, that's important. That is important.
We had to know who he was, Steve.
We had to see the humanity in there.
Well, I guess.
Yeah, that was good, because he was at conflict with himself.
We seem to have wandered into a conversation about Kylo Ren, so let's hit it head on, right? We know, and this is spoiler-laden, everyone knows that we're spoiling, so we know Kylo Ren is actually Ben's Solo, son of Han and Leia. So there's a human element there that we're very much invested in, right? Then you've got him idolising Vader. Now, to me, it's implied that Snoke's used Vader's legacy to seduce Ben Solo to the dark side. Then he's imposed this mantle of Kylo Ren on him, given him the Knights of Ren, and that's when they slaughtered all those kids in Rey's Force Vision. Yeah. My favourite moment of the entire movie, that Force Vision.
Yeah, and mine too.
Probably. It's important that we see not only that Kylo Ren is a person under there, but he's a person that's come from good stock, and he's somebody that's willingly making the decision to plunge into darkness. He's not being tricked into this. That to
I'm
me,
not,
this,
I'm not sure.
Sorry, Paul, you go, mate.
I picked up the fact that, I mean, obviously you got the Han and Leia backstory, which it was like, we're crazy about each other, but it didn't seem to work, which is why Han went smuggling again.
Yeah.
But the rejection that his son took from that is what forced him to focus on the way his grandfather moved in different circles, I thought. And that's where the dark side started to seduce him.
Yeah.
I would like to have seen a nice, like Ray did, a nice bit of backstory with Kylo.
I think that's to come, mate.
How he got the masks, you know, Vader's mask or something.
I think you're going to see it. I mean, there's more than that. He's got a tray of Vader's ashes as well, isn't he? That he keeps his own helmet in. I just think that's what she said. I just think you've got with Kylo someone we haven't seen before, a kind of character we haven't seen before, one that's so willingly walking into this darkness and thinking that that's the path that Anakin took as well, when it couldn't be further from the truth. And that whole scene where he's talking to the helmet that we're familiar with because we've seen
that, I enjoyed.
When he's saying, I can feel the pull of the light, he knows that there's a chance he can come back from it, but he's deciding not to. And that is just him in that room. He's not doing it for anybody else's benefit. It's just him saying, I need to choke this light out of myself so that I'm purely evil, consumed by the dark side. And I also think as well, just to touch on one more point, I think he sees in Rey not only a kinship, because I think they're related, but I think he sees a potential there for her to become a powerful ally and an apprentice at some point.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's the whole Darth Luke story again.
Yeah. That's the Sith.
But that's going to be the essence of this anyway. That's unavoidable, because that's how the Jedi work.
It depends now whether or not she views her relationship to Kylo Ren as an effort to save the guy from darkness, the way Luke went after Vader, or if it's just stopping him at all costs.
Yeah. I mean, I did. As far as character development goes, I didn't have a problem with any of the other main characters in the film. I think where I'm heading towards is I kind of wish they didn't put... I think Luke... No, I'm not going to say Luke. I'm going to... You know, I think the actor who plays Luke, Mark Hamill, wants to be in Star Wars, and that's why he wasn't in it. But I think they built the rest of the film around dealing with how they work out and get out of the story Leia and Han. And that's what's really... I could have watched that film without Leia and Han and been more happy. And I never thought I'd say that because I wanted him in it desperately. Does that make sense, Paul?
to a degree. Yeah.
I'm asking Paul because he's the only...
I thought the whole Han and Leia story was so half-assed done.
I am concerned at how much you're looking at what's going on around the edges, Steve. And I hope you get to... to view it and lose yourself in it.
I want to stop. They made me think.
Your complaints about it seem to be everything that happens outside the narrative of the film. Yeah. Everything that's going on in the production, everything that's going on with people's contracts and things like that. And I understand that sort of stuff's difficult to.
But the core of the narrative, Mark, was Harrison Ford in that film, and it didn't work.
I completely disagree. I think it worked.
All right.
I think it worked absolutely beautifully, and I think it worked the way it was designed to work, which was to sacrifice that character on the altar of Kylo Ren, because we never really saw Anakin Skywalker or Darth Vader take the steps that
rephrase. If that was the arc of if that was the point of the arc of the character in the story, then it worked perfectly, but it was so ham-fisted put together.
Do you think
I felt nothing for those characters in that film? Nothing. All the romance I had from four and five, I thought it was peed upon from a great height.
That's a good word, actually, because I did get romance from this. I got I like the fact that it wasn't teased out. I like the fact that virtually at a 45 minute mark we find out that Kylo Ren is Han's son. There's no joke about it. They're not trying to hide the fact. They just deliver that piece of exposition. And we're off. And then that really paid off for me when they went out on that catwalk. And Harrison Ford Han Solo stood at one end of that catwalk and screamed Ben at the top of his voice. And when that name hit me, all my hair stood on end.
I was too annoyed at the fact they were just about to kill off Han Solo, because that I already knew that then. That's what ruined it for me. I knew at that moment.
We're back to Han Solo.
I know.
Hashtag Han.
That is what ruined the film for me. I mean, aside from the fact that Leia was crap in it, and I can't understand why she was over in England for so long, because there was virtually no... I can't remember any of her scenes, really. They weren't very well delivered or executed, in my opinion. Not because of Carrie Fisher. I just think that they've just taken great lengths to try and... Oh, God, we've got to slot these two in here. Let's get rid of them as quick as possible. Mark Hamill, all right, he's kind of basis for the whole thing, so we'll keep him in, you know, till the next one. And it's all kind of, oh, for God's sake, this is Star Wars. You said you were going to keep... You were going to do it for the older fans. And they haven't, really. I don't think so. I was not lost in magic.
I don't know. For the fanboys that are my age, Mark's age, your age, Steve, I think they more or less hit the nail on the head from what people wanted to see. But unfortunately, I hate to insult anybody here, I think from a script-driven point of view, they were still dealing with people that were watching it in the 70s. Now, if you're a pure fanboy, you would have been on the roller coaster ride with your hands in the air and you're being fine. I still need a little bit of focus and concentration and story to pull me along with the film. I'm not 8 anymore, and I'm not a pure Star Wars fanboy, which is probably why I probably thought there was going to be more coming. That was the thing. But if you're a fanboy, it was Disneyland. It was Disneyland.
Maybe I'm
of course
not
it was.
A fanboy.
I think there is more coming. I think
that's the thing. It is JJ.
I'd have been disappointed if they'd have wrapped things up neatly in a bow by the end of this movie, because we've still got two more chapters in this trilogy to come, and we've got standalone movies in between those, and who knows, another trilogy on the back end of this one. We're going to get 10, 11 and 12 possibly. I don't think they could afford to wrap everything up in this film, but I think looking back at it from the end of this trilogy, you might have a different perspective. But I still think they've managed to have that continuation, the promise of that continuation of the story in place, but still tell a solid story within the confines of this one movie. It had a beginning, middle and end. It had solid character development. And yeah, they did some things that have ruffled a few feathers, like dispatching one of their favourite characters, but it's all done for a purpose. It was giving him his wish from 1983 and adding weight to it, which I think it did.
I think you're right. They did have solid character development for everyone except the three main protagonists. It was like incidental, like, oh, meh. Carrie, I mean, it was awful. Harrison was all right. Hans, I keep calling it Harrison, shows how little I'm invested in his character. But I was starting to think Han's back by the middle of the film. That, you know, they're making you laugh a bit. And all right, he's a bit older, but they've actually kind of got Han back. And that's why I thought, now I've got to try and go and invest in the others, because I know he's going to snuff it, because that's what he wants. And then I started thinking about Disney and all the rest of it.
Yeah. You didn't get the viewing experience that you deserved, Steve.
No, I didn't.
You were distracted by that stuff, and I think that's a shame.
But then I blame them, because they didn't. The moment they played it safe with A New Hope, I thought, hang on a minute, like, come on.
This
is exciting. Go off at a tangent. You've got the opportunity to do something fantastic here.
But they did. I mean, we've already said, just to fill you in, Paul, we've already discussed the similarities between Episode 1, Episode 4 and Episode 7. And it's my position on it is that it's a stage. That's the Star Wars stage. You deposit that character on the Star Wars stage and they get propelled into the hero's journey. That's the spirit of Star Wars. That's Act 1. In every Star Wars trilogy. The difference is, yes, they played it safe, but the difference is they put characters into play that we haven't seen before, and we haven't seen somebody like Rey before. They haven't been as active as Rey.
We haven't?
Been. No.
You didn't see Luke in Rey?
I saw plenty of Luke in Rey, but I saw a lot of Leia in Rey. I saw a very active, noble and courageous character who was tied to her home by a situation beyond her control, thinking that someone was going to come back for her. Not, I don't want to go off. And, you know, I think Rey was a little bit more gregarious than Luke ever was. Because Luke seemed very much afraid to do anything in A New Hope. And yeah. it helped expedite Rey's character development to a point where she ended a significantly powerful character, whereas Luke ended A New Hope pretty much just starting his journey toward that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, when we were on the, I've got to go relatively shortly, so might be a good way for me to wrap up. I mean, can we mention Luke quickly?
Because yeah, well, let me just get your quick thoughts on Finn. Just one line. What's your take on John Boyega's Finn? I hate to give him a short shrift, but we are running out of time.
I really liked him. Me personally, I thought he was a brilliant sandwich character. He wasn't the lead for me. Rey was, but I thought it was really well done. I liked his character. He was a bit different. There's no one really to equate him to, apart from Han, you know, because he's not Force. He's not family. I thought it was really well handled, Finn, and I like his character, and I can see him bringing him back because it makes sense.
Yeah. Paul, what's your take on Finn?
Finn is very, very, very interesting and very exciting in the single fact, why is he the only stormtrooper that felt a conscience? I want to know what happened there. So that's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah, you might have to wait a long time.
I think we're going to get, I mean, he, like we said earlier, he's on set in January. He certainly sounds like he's going to be a significant part of episode 8. So I think we'll get some answers there. Right, let's get on to the Luke talk and then we'll wrap up because we're approaching the 1 hour mark. So, Steve?
What's there to say? Lots of talk about Luke because that's the map that, you know, he's hidden on a place, but that's a bit convenient. Why the hell was he even in it? I mean, what, 5 seconds at the end? That's kind of, you know, it annoyed me because he's been interviewed in that. And like I said earlier, how do you feel being back at the Star Wars studio filming Star Wars? And I'm loving it and all. It's all crap. He was in it 5 seconds, unless there's a load of cut scenes I'm missing.
Steve,
he wasn't even in it.
Can I drag you back into the film? Don't worry about what goes on outside of it. He had story responsibilities in the movie.
Well, his character did, but him as an actor. You need to see the actor's face, don't you, to make that correlation?
Yeah, don't you think that was the reward? From the very start, that crawl of text, from the very start it promised Luke's the point of this. You know, most people think he's a myth. Some people think he's the big bad, because it's clear that the First Order have all been raised to believe that he is the villain of the piece. And we know the Knights of Ren slaughtered his students and he went into hiding. So he was he's in full-on Obi-Wan mode, right? That's what I took from this, that at the end, he's removed himself from public life because he needs to be there when the next New Hope.
Do you not feel a bit swindled, though, that you expected to see Luke? They made you think Luke was in it.
I mean,
he's in it.
No,
I don't
feel swindled at all. I think it's like if we were watching, if this was a movie centered around Obi-Wan after episode 3, which, please, somebody make those movies. But after episode 3, when he goes into hiding, this is like building up to that for me. You know, he is now that Obi-Wan archetype.
Wasn't he at Pinewood Studios, though, for a time?
Who, Mark?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, but what were they filming? Because that shot was filmed on an island somewhere.
You don't know what's on the cutting room floor, though, Steve, do you? They had to get this down to 2:15, so there could have been plenty more. There could have been, I mean, they did that whole shot with him with R2. There might have been more to that, you know, that stuff that took place in the Force Vision.
Well, yeah, I mean, but all right. Well, I guess I'll forgive him if it's on the cutting room floor, but can they give it to me?
In the entire process of pre-production, Steve, there'll be an enormous amount of conversation of continuation for episode 8. It would have been talking to him about that and all sorts. So,
what's your take on Luke, Paul?
I've got to be honest. All I can say is I saw exactly what I expected to see. I didn't think I'd see it in Michael Skellig, though. That was funny.
Yeah.
One of the most popular Northern Irish island sort of retreats for people. There he is at the top of the hill. Like, oh, doody-do.
Yeah, it's very.
I thought it was good.
That's
one of my favourite locations, actually. I think it's an amazing set, and I can't believe it wasn't used before. It's very mystical. It's great.
Now, they've been back already to shoot stuff for episode 3, for episode 8, by me.
It's weird. I wanted us to see him there, but she didn't have to get to him. Do you know what I mean? I would have been happy with us just this, you know, just editing to a cut of a man on the island. I didn't care really if she reached him halfway through the next film.
You know what that says to me? That says to me that Luke was, I mean, this is something, I've got something,
I think they found him
on,
too quick.
I've got something going up on Talk Star Wars about this, because I think they found him by design. Because to me, I've heard people complain about the contrivance of R2 just sort of springing back into life when he did. It was too convenient.
Well, he probably did that.
I think he did that. I think the plan was to have R2 had the main part of the map, and he was in low power mode, so that was completely secure. And then La Santeca, which is the Max von Sydow character, he had the small piece of the map that he gave to Poe. And the idea is, when the New Hope emerges, when it's time, you put those two bits together and you can get to Luke. And the fact that he was standing on Skellig Michael Island looking out over the sea in his cloak, pretty much ready to go, suggests to me that he was aware of everything that was going on. He knows that Snoke's out there, and he knows who Snoke really is. He knows that the Knights of Ren and Kylo represent a significant threat to the galaxy, and he knows that he needs to be able to pull the last remaining Jedi student back in and train her. And I think that's his daughter, and he's the one that dropped her off on Jakku.
Yeah, it makes sense, doesn't it? He's obviously...
Oh, yeah, he's leaving. He's in that ship that leaves Jakku, yeah. I think. I actually thought it was a bit simpler than that, Mark. I just thought R2 woke up when the two pieces of the plan were put together.
Yeah, it may be, but I think that they were separated for a reason, weren't they? One was the map, one was the key, and you can't find Luke without both. And that's why R2 was powered down for such a long
time. Can I do an enormous rewind? Please tell me your eyes didn't roll when Poe Dameron put the plans for finding Luke in BB-8 in the very beginning of the film, because I was like, you've got to be kidding
me. Oh, I loved
me.
It. I loved that echo. Come on. I loved it, because that's Star Wars.
That wasn't an echo.
That's Star Wars. That's the rhyming stanzas. You could almost trademark it.
It was cold.
I forgive those things, because that's the DNA of Star Wars.
All right.
Anyway, look, let's wrap this up, because I know Steve's got to go. I think there's more to be discussed. So what?
This is a 6-hour conversation, yeah, mate.
What I've suggested is we're not going to record again now until the new year. So I've asked the people that listen to our podcast to write in with their experience of having seen The Force Awakens, to write in with their anecdotes, their theories about where everything's going. And then what I'm going to try and do is, if we get enough material, put together a listener-focused show for the new year. So if you want to jump onto that, mate, please feel free. But perhaps we should do a two-part analysis. When we've had chance to see the film again,
yeah,
perhaps we should do part one on Talk Star Wars and part two on the Movie Geeks film cast.
Again?
Review it. A proper review.
I've got to watch it from a professional perspective.
Well, I'd like to give a score now, and then I don't know if you guys want to score it. I mean, I have to say, I'm scoring it at 6.5 out of 10 at the moment.
Right. I already scored it, so...
What did you score it, Paul?
I gave it a 3 to 3.5, and I said I was being generous.
From 10?
5.
From 5, oh, right. Yeah, so you're pretty much similar. Yeah, I'm going to give it one giant bag of joy, because I don't do arbitrary scores. I think it's at least as good, if not better, than Return of the Jedi, and it's just a fraction behind The Empire Strikes Back for me. I think there's some really intriguing stuff in there. I cannot wait to spend the rest of my life with this film. I think it's wonderful.
That's nice. I mean, I'd love to feel like that. Maybe
you will. I think you will, Steve. I just think you need to learn how to watch it. Because
they make a special edition where they actually invest in the old characters.
They're not going to do a special edition, because that's their nasty words in Star Wars.
Right. Can I retort your, you need to learn how to watch it? Maybe you need to learn how to watch it, mate.
Yeah, well, the idea for me watching it a second time is so that I can watch it with my critical faculties engaged, because
I
couldn't do it on the first showing. I was just too involved in it. And
you were too busy wearing your pants.
I am very much aware that there were a couple of instances when I watched the prequels where I left the theatre feeling like that, but I did snap out of that pretty quickly. This thing's kept its hold over me for the best part of, 4 days? I think that I will watch it again, and maybe I'll be able to be blessed with a little bit more objectivity. But right now, this film does what it's supposed to do. For 2 hours and 15 minutes, it transported me away, and I had a fantastic time watching it.
If it's any consolation, I liked it a lot more than any of the prequels. There you go.
That's a small consolation. Right, let's wrap this up. Steve, where can people find you if they want to find you outside the podcast?
You can sponsor me to save the world, and actually, and Paul, you can sponsor me as well if you like, and Mark, you can sponsor me as well if you like. www.justgiving.com/warewalk, where as in house, walk as in walk.
I'll put a link in the description as well, Steve.
Already did that.
Oh, thank you, Paul.
Welcome, sir.
Your YouTube, Steve?
Yeah, you can find me under Calistine, C A L A S T E I N on YouTube.
And there's a link to that down below as well. Paul, where can people find you?
You can find me on Mark's left shoulder. I am the chip.
You can find everything I do at talkstarwars.co.uk. I'm on Twitter at talkstarwars and Facebook /talkstarwars. Have a great Christmas and a great New Year. Join us when we come back in January. Get your anecdotes and theories into us about The Force Awakens, and we'll do a listener-focused episode then. Paul, seriously, when he's not on my shoulder, can be found at moviegeeksfilmnews.com and on the Movie Geeks Filmcast. Right, is that us done?
That's us done. Happy Christmas, everyone.
Love and peace to all.
The end.
Cheers. Bye. Nee, 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 nee